National Geographic photographer Catherine Carnot is an instructor at the Book Passage Travel Writers and Photographers Conference. Come along and join Lori McCandish King, associate producer for the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show, Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, as she talks with Catherine about how to compose a photo, tips for photographing people, how to communicate with photo subjects who speak another language, and the proper role of post-processing utilizing Photoshop. Catherine also talks about the surprising and deeply moving experiences she had photographing victims of Agent Orange in Vietnam. And she tells us about her book, Vietnam, 25 Years Documenting a Changing Country, as well as her photo workshops held in Italy and Vietnam.
This is Lori McCandish King reporting from Corte Madera, California. We're at the Book Passage Travel Writers Conference, and I'm speaking with Catherine Carnot, National Geographic photographer. Welcome, Catherine.
Thanks so much, Lori. It's good to be here.
I sat in on some of the sessions that you taught this afternoon and was amazed at how much there is to see when a person is evaluating photography. When you're making a photograph, how do you think about the composition and what people are going to see when it's actually produced?
I don't actually think that much when I'm photographing. I try to shoot from a sort of intuitive place. It's not that I'm not thinking, it's just that I don't want to be too cerebral or too intellectual about it. And I don't really think that I'm thinking about the audience. I'm in the moment, I'm in the zone, I'm inside the scene, I'm inside the photograph, I'm reacting, I'm composing, I'm feeling it.
And you're able to do that because you have so much experience. But for those of us who don't have quite as much experience, what kinds of things do you suggest we think about?
Well, when I teach photography, I don't generally teach by urging people to think about things like rule of thirds and leading lines and all these sort of mathematical ways of looking at photographs. I urge them to, when they're shooting, looking through the camera, to make sure they're seeing everything that's in the frame. To quote a wonderful photo editor from National Geographic magazine, Susan Welchman, who once said to me, "You're responsible for everything in the frame." When I teach, I'm really trying to urge people to hone their vision, to sharpen their eyes, to pay attention and look, see everything that's in the frame, especially the corners, the sides, and to keep shooting, shoot in bursts of threes.
And why is that?
Well, you shoot in bursts of threes because when you're shooting action, motion, people walking, people talking, one of those may be a blink, one of those may be a bad gait. In other words, when they're walking, it might look a little awkward. But if you shoot three of each one, one may not have that blink or that quote-unquote bad gait.
One of the things that you pointed out in class was that people need to be posing in their own poses rather than in something that a photographer has imposed on them. How do you get people to relax and feel and look natural?
Well, it's a big subject. There's a lot to say about people photography. I think that people will mirror you. So even if you yourself feel tense or uncomfortable or anxious, try to appear relaxed because then they'll feel more relaxed. In terms of getting them to just be themselves, if I sense that they are stiff or feel that they're tense or their shoulders are hunched up or their mouth is tight, I think what I might do is kind of distract them away from the camera. Maybe I'll put the camera down, or if the camera's on the tripod, I'll just step away, and it'll just be more sort of a human-to-human, person-to-person connection. I might start chatting about something. It's really not about photography. It's just two of us hanging out. Or if I'm really not getting anywhere with that, I might pretend that there's a little technical problem with my camera. I'm going to look at it for a moment. It's really just an excuse to let them fall into their own way of sitting or leaning or standing, or let's just see what they do on their own. So I just pretend to talk to my assistant for a minute or look away and do something else for a moment. And they naturally will relax into their own posture and pose, and then I know it's their natural way of being. So I never direct somebody, put your arm here, that kind of thing. I might say something like, you know, maybe you want to put your hand in your pocket, but if it doesn't look natural, I won't say anything at all, and I'll just let them go into their own quote-unquote pose.
You've shot people all over the world. How do you communicate with people when you don't speak the same language?
I'm a big believer in hiring a translator because I really do want to communicate with them with words in language. I spend a lot of time interviewing people. I want to know about them, whatever it is that they do and they think, they feel, their family, their profession, their art. Let's talk about your country, your village. I want to communicate. I want to have a conversation. The journalist part in me wants to really get those facts right.
If you don't have National Geographic arranging all that for you, how do you go about finding the right kind of person who can facilitate that?
Actually, National Geographic arranges nothing for me.
Oh, okay. Well,
I do everything myself, including my own travel arrangements and everything,
boy.
Hotels, all of it. And I prefer to do it that way because it'll be how I want it to be. So I actually have, I think I have a guardian angel who's the guardian angel of fabulous assistance, because it's the one area where I have managed to be blessed with the most capable, intelligent, proactive, enthusiastic, wonderful assistants / fixers everywhere in the world. And my secret is this. I have a letter that is a bit of a template. I, of course, change it for the assignment and the place and the time. And it's a strong letter. It states exactly what kind of person I'm looking for. I'm very clear that I'm looking for someone who's enthusiastic, who's indefatigable, who's going to be excited about working together, for whom I will follow up and help them in their interest in photography, in their career, if it works out well, which I do. I'm looking for someone who's a people person, not afraid to approach people, someone who is a version of me, because we're working as a team. And when we're together out there in the field, I want them to do a very close translation so that when I communicate with people, they're communicating almost exactly what I'm saying in the same way, especially when I'm photographing somebody and my words and the way that I'm saying those words to the person or the people that I'm photographing is often how I'm getting the photograph that I'm getting, those expressions, those relaxed postures, those poses. I need my translator to be just a version of me, and we're working very closely as a team together. So my letter states clearly what I'm looking for, and at the end I say, if you do not fit this criteria, then please don't respond. And there are no surprises because I've stated clearly what I'm looking for, and I've been so lucky over all of these years to work with the most remarkable people with whom I've carried on lasting relationships.
How much post-production work is involved in a photo shoot? We often see amateur photographers using filters and special effects, and I don't get the impression that that's done, but there surely is some post-production work. How does that work out?
Well, I think there's some sort of an odd myth that pure photography involves no Photoshop,
yeah.
which is... I'm not quite sure where that comes from, because that's absurd.
Yeah.
You know, as we always say, Photoshop is simply the darkroom. So we used to go into the darkroom. Now we're going into the Photoshop darkroom. Of course, you want to try to get it right when you're shooting. I don't shoot with the I'll fix it in post attitude, because there's a lot of things that Photoshop is never going to fix. Shooting for National Geographic, mostly we don't do any processing. We give them the raw files. We give them JPEGs to show this is what the intention of this photograph is, but we don't do the processing. However, for my other clients, or for example, I had a big exhibition in April in Hanoi of my Vietnam photographs, 25 years of shooting in Vietnam. All those prints were done by ImageFlow in Mill Valley, California, which is a fantastic lab. And the printer did all the processing of the images, including rescanning slides. So we started all the way back from the beginning. He scanned slides, worked on those, took raw files, worked on those. And at times I sat side by side with him and I saw just how much you can do with an image to really bring it to life. It's remarkable.
Tell us a little about the book and your experience over 25 years making those images.
Wow. I am so proud of this book, which I self-published because I really had no choice. It was kind of last minute. I had this exhibition going up in the Art Vietnam Gallery in Hanoi, which is a fabulous gallery run by Suzanne Lecht, who's been in Vietnam for almost 25 years herself. And this exhibition was going up in April for the 40th anniversary of the end of what the Vietnamese call the U.S. War, what we call the Vietnam War. And I had been wanting very much, it had always been my dream to have a book of my Vietnam photographs, but I just couldn't do all of this single-handedly in 6 months, especially not try to put out a major book. So I settled with the fact that for now, I'll put out a catalog. Catalog relaxed me. Because catalog means, okay, we all know the color's not so perfect, it's not really a book, it's just a catalog. Although I had been warned against having anything printed in Vietnam, that I would be disappointed with the quality, I thought, well, for a catalog it will be okay. So I was very lucky to work with a very talented book designer, Khi Nam, who is a Vietnamese young man, lives in Saigon, so talented, and he was all on board with the project, and we spent about 6 weeks to 2 months putting this book together.
Fast.
Yeah, if I have the timeline right. And the book ended up being a very personal project. What I love about self-publishing is that it's everything that I want it to be. Nobody told me what to do and what not to do. No one said, well, market analysis shows us that, such and such. So I dedicate it to my parents. There's photographs of my father, Stanley Carnot, the great historian and journalist on Vietnam. It's everything that I want it to be. And I think that, you know, when you really produce something from the heart and you stubbornly do it your own way and it's good, it's solid, people respond. And at the exhibition, the month-long period that the photographs were up on the walls and the book was for sale in the gallery, we sold well over 100 books. The book is still selling at the gallery, and I'm so excited because I didn't plan on this.
Okay, so title of book, and you can get it at bookpassage.com.
Vietnam, 25 years documenting a changing country.
You also teach photography classes. Tell me a little bit about when those are. How often do you teach? Is it on a trip, or it's you teach them locally, or how does that work?
So I've been teaching for many years. I started teaching at Maine Photo Workshops, at the Santa Fe Photo Workshops, a workshop maybe every other summer. Enjoyed it, felt that I was good at it, was busy shooting on assignment and so forth. And I started to think about designing and creating my own workshop. Again, what I want to do, where I want to take students, but more along the lines of this. I've been a contributing photographer at National Geographic Traveler for many years. And I've gone on well over 24 assignments, feature stories, and many other smaller stories for National Geographic Traveler, and have had incredible adventures, meeting people, finding myself in situations, looking around going, this is incredible. I can't believe that I'm in the middle of this. I have to share this with somebody. How can I do that? I'm going to design a workshop along the lines of a National Geographic Traveler assignment, but I'm going to omit all the sort of the searching for the perfect shepherd and the asking and the research. I'm just going to provide the perfect shepherd experience, shall we say. All those perfect experiences that I end up finding on assignment, I'm going to provide those. So when I shoot and when I travel, it's all about interacting and spending time with the people in that place. I find myself in their homes, at their farms, spending an entire day or a weekend. And that's what my photo workshops are about. So it's not about having touristy experiences and kind of flitting across the surface like a butterfly. It's not about getting off and on tour buses and going to tried and true sort of tourist sites. It's not like that at all. For example, in Umbria, every May, I give my Umbria photo workshop, which all the details can be found on the website, my website for that workshop, which is Catherine Carnot Photo Workshop.com.
Spell that for us.
Catherine Carnot, CathereineKarnow, photoworkshop.com. It's completely and totally unique. Every day, we have some kind of experience where we interact. So, for example, on a Sunday afternoon, we meet the local Cinquecento Club, the Fiat 500 Club of Viterbo in the piazza, and they all come with their, they've buffed and shined their teeny tiny little colorful vintage Cinquecento cars. Cool. We only have colorful cars. We don't have black or white or gray. Uh-huh. All the cars have moon roofs that open, and there's one student per driver per car. So everybody's sort of matched up with a driver, yeah. And we parade through the tiny little hill village nearby, and we have a sort of car parade, and locals end up coming to their windows and shouting out the window and crying out and waving to us, and the cars beep their horns, and students photograph each other, and we have absolutely a blast, and it all ends with gelato, which the drivers buy us. And it's a fabulous day. And after 4 years, we all know each other really well. I mean, not, I have different guests, although I have repeat guests now. And another day we go out with fishermen on their boats on the beautiful Lake Bolsena. And these are real fishermen. They're not really fishing. I mean, they're taking us out. They'll pick up some nets. But we go out in the boats with them at dawn. It's beautiful. And they fry up fish, which they've just brought in. These teeny tiny little fish, they fry them up. And at 9 a.m, we drink wine and eat fried fish. We have yoga every day. This must be the only photo workshop that has really, really good yoga. We eat delicious, fresh, healthy, often organic food every day, so we're not eating too much pasta. We have pizza making, wine tasting. Every day we have class time and critique, so the learning is very serious. It's not a photo tour, it's a photo workshop. However, I do want to emphasize that I'm very happy to accept photographers of any level. I rarely have people who are intent on becoming professional photographers. They're serious amateurs or hobbyists, or perhaps not even that serious. They just enjoy it.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
You have a photo workshop in Vietnam too, Catherine. Tell us about that.
It will be along the lines of Umbria. But what's different about the Vietnam workshop is we'll be doing a lot more street shooting, because in Vietnam, there's so much life happening on the street. There's more street shooting, and there's all kinds of special experiences. It's all about, again, interacting with locals, also learning about Vietnam from people who live there, who are experts, diplomats, and journalists. We'll be shooting in Hanoi. We'll have a very, very special day, I think, when we visit Agent Orange families, where either the parents and or the children of diseases associated with Agent Orange. This is a subject that's very near and dear to me. I've spent time illustrating the devastating effects of Agent Orange, and I want to share that experience. Each guest will get to spend time with different families to learn about this terrible legacy. So the workshop, again, is based on my experiences in Vietnam. So I want to share my Vietnam with this small group of just 10 students.
You'll shoot the Agent Orange victims. How do you do that without feeling like you're objectifying them? How does that work?
My photographs of families and children who are afflicted with diseases associated with Agent Orange, I believe, are pretty different from most of the photographs that you see. Most of the photographs that you see, for some reason, want to show how twisted and deformed these people look. And I don't see them that way at all. I see the humanity in them. I see them as people, and that's how I photograph them. I get deep into their lives and their emotions. My project on Agent Orange, which I shot in 2010, I spent 10 days with just two families. So all day, every day, I documented how they lived their daily lives. I interviewed them. It was part of a film project that I did with the photographer and filmmaker Ed Cashy. And while he did the video, I did the stills. And we went very deep into the lives of these families. And I've continued that work. I provide translators so my participants can talk to them. It's just how you photograph them. I will show them my photographs, and I think they'll understand that that's the approach. The subject of Agent Orange is very, very important to me. Most people don't realize that there are thousands of people, also in the United States. We can't forget about those Vietnam vets and their offspring who also have been affected. But I will hopefully photograph that story too one day. But now I'm photographing on people in Vietnam who are affected. And as I say, most people do not realize that there are millions of people actually in Vietnam who have been affected, and that there are babies being born every single day in Vietnam with diseases associated with Agent Orange, because these diseases are passed down genetically. Diseases such as spinal bifida, respiratory problems, cancer, which develops usually later in life, they're absolutely devastating with no end in sight. And as an American, I feel a responsibility to cover this subject and to let the world know this is a real problem that's not ending anytime soon.
I don't think I realize the extent of the problem, and I'm really glad people like you are doing things like this, because it is an important thing for us to remember. We may not be using Agent Orange now, but we're still doing things that affect people and will affect people for generations.
Yes, and there's the environmental damage, which still exists in Vietnam. However, my area of interest is photographing the people. It's heartbreaking and incredibly poignant to spend time with these families who show absolutely no rancor towards Americans whatsoever. And I've become quite close to these two families in particular with whom I spent time. I visited them again fairly recently just to say hello and just to visit them. And one family who have two boys who are afflicted are, it's hard to describe. I mean, these two boys suffer from extreme mental challenges, and yet they were so peaceful and sort of beautiful to be with that I could have just hung out with them all weekend.
When I think of photography, the magic of photography, I think about the way it affects the viewer, but it sounds like it really affects you, the photographer, as well.
Absolutely. I'm actually a very emotional person and quite sensitive. I mean, I'm quite thin-skinned, and it has sometimes made it hard to photograph subjects like Agent Orange. I remember one experience while I was photographing this family of these two boys, and we were at the physical therapy clinic with the one younger boy, and he was playing with blocks, colored blocks that kept tumbling down, and every time his mother built them up, and then they would tumble down, and he would laugh with glee and clap his hands. And he was so oblivious to the fact that he had these diseases from this terrible chemical that we sprayed over that country. He was so oblivious to his condition and so full of happiness and joy at just the colored blocks tumbling down. I had to run out of the clinic and go around the corner, where I just dissolved into tears. It was so beautiful and so sad at the same time, and I just felt so gripped with anger and sadness at what I was seeing.
And then you translated that into something that the rest of us can see and maybe begin to understand.
Yeah, and I think that it was so interesting. When I was raising money on this crowdfunding site last year, I would put these pictures up on Facebook and put out a call out for money, and it was rather a grueling process, actually. And I was having trouble raising all of this money, and I had 60 days to raise the goal that I had set, which was $27,000. And it was slow going, and I was putting up these sort of sad pictures of these boys. They couldn't walk, and these very, very difficult pictures to look at. And then all of a sudden one day, I just changed the whole sort of look of my campaign. And instead, I started putting up these kinds of pictures, which I just described, of this little boy laughing and clapping his hands, and sort of these positive, almost happy looking pictures. And the money started to come in. And people told me that when they couldn't look at those difficult pictures, and they would just feel bad and want to sort of, quote unquote, turn the page. So I don't think about how I should photograph these people. I just do it in my own way. But you don't see pictures of Agent Orange victims looking happy and smiling most of the time, unless it's for a website of an NGO. But for magazines and journalism, you don't usually see that. I think it's important.
So you've also given us a way to look at things that is not so painful that we can't stand to look at it. It kind of cracks things open for us. Your vision cracks things open for the rest of us.
I guess so. I mean, when I photograph, to circle back to your original question of what am I thinking when I photograph and how do I want this to affect the viewer, I'm really not thinking about it at all. I'm just in the moment, just documenting it, or as we always say, being a witness. We always hear that every photograph you take is actually a self-portrait. And I never quite understood what that meant, and I thought that was a little pretentious. And it wasn't until about a year ago that I realized, you know, that is true, actually. Maybe it's not a self-portrait, but it is coming from within you. And I'm basically a pretty happy, optimistic person, and that's pretty much how I shoot.
Thanks so much, Catherine. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you so much, Lori. A pleasure for me, too.
You've been listening to associate producer and host Lori McCandish-King interviewing Catherine Carnell, an instructor at the Book Passage Travel Writers and Photographers Conference in Corte Madera, California.
Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Hawaiian Legacy Reforestation Initiative.
Hawaiian Legacy Hardwoods and Four Seasons Resort invite you to sponsor a legacy tree and contribute to the biodiversity of Hawaii. Legacy trees can honor an individual, commemorate an event, or memorialize a loved one. Every tree dedication is a living legacy and a gift which grows grander year after year. The best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is now.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show, Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a weekly featured podcast on NPR.org, produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. Our San Francisco-based associate producer is Molly Blaisdell, covering the San Francisco Bay Area, the island of Maui, and the South Pacific. Our Wisconsin-based associate producer is Julie Henning,